Hello, and welcome to the League of Ultimate Questions.
Woo!
Woo!
All right. Nobody asked, and we heard it, so now we're making a question and answer for League of Ultimate Questing.
We hear lots of things no one says.
So that being said, we've got like a whole slew of questions that we're going to answer. We're going to try and get to all of them, and we've also got some questions we're going to ask each other. For those of you who have listened to the show before, we're going to be doing a recap at the end of the episode. We'll go ahead and signal you ahead of time. For those of you who haven't listened, and this is your first time, we're going to be doing the full recap in as much detail as we can. Feel free to stop listening at any point if you're worried about spoilers, and we'll try to avoid spoilers where possible in this experience, but the goal of this is to kind of give people who have been longtime listeners a little bit more information. And people who don't really have the energy to go through the first 20 or so episodes and watch us go through our genesis, an opportunity to kind of catch up. But we're going to lead off with a bit of an introduction. I am Zach Barkas. I play Artyom Volkov. I am a drow cleric of sunlight, specifically of the sun god Bren, a god of suffering and sunlight, raised in Drogendrav, a underground drow enclave, mm-hmm. And from there I've basically found my way to the surface through extreme struggle, and now I've joined the League of Ultimate Questing to spread the word of my god and to make a little money on the side.
Oh yeah,
I feel intimidated by that intro, damn. My name's Alante Bearcat, and I play Christ. I am the crystalline sorcerer, a very awesome custom thing that our amazing DM made for me. He is from Alcara, and yeah.
My name is Michael Loving. I play Horuthex, a dragonborn warlock of the firstborn, a dragon-like sort of demigod entity created by law for this campaign and this world setting. I am from a swamp in the... What continent is it? Or
Danmere.
In Danmere.
And I'm Sam Frost. I am a... I'm playing Arvid... The furball Drewbard.
Are you sure that's what they're called?
That's Drew really Barb? Hard.
I'm pretty sure we have a different name for Drewbard.
Drew Barb.
Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barbymore? Wait.
Drew Barbymore?
Yeah.
That was like one of my favorite gags from the outro, specifically when we were like Drew Barrymore.
Yeah. So furball Drewbard. I came from a tribe in the hills called the Sons of the Blood Moon. I was rejected from my tribe and have come to the League of Ultimate Questing to try to find myself again in a tribe of my own. Recently have attached to the ram. I was able to change into one recently. It was exciting.
Yeah.
And terrifying.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think this is a spoiler. If you want to keep going in Barbarian, as I assume, I have built a ram totem that you can totally reference.
I'm so excited.
I thought you said you were stoned, and I'm like, okay, jealous.
That's me.
And my name is Law. I am the Dungeon Master. We're playing in a world that I've been building since I was just a wee lad. I'm a big fan of it. Started Dungeon Mastering. Is that a thing? Past tense. since I was a nine-year-old lad. Love D&D, love all the additions, and I'm super happy to get to make up this really weird story with these great players to tell their own tales along the way and kind of craft this bizarre enterprise thing that hopefully in the future many of us can partake in.
I like the idea that it's mastering dungeons.
My favorite, I almost had a business card that said Dungeon Maven.
Ooh.
I was going to say Dungeon Mustering might be too much.
I am the Dungeon Mustard.
Yeah.
And a chef, so Dungeon Mustard. Oh man, that should be a thing.
Should it? Are we sure that should be a thing?
I don't want Dungeon Mustard.
I have seen many parties have been stone ground.
That's awful. That's thank you for that.
Rocks fall, everyone's delicious.
Dungeon Mustard sits on the shelf right next to the ochre jelly.
Bad.
Gross.
If you like good jokes, this isn't the podcast for you.
I'm sorry, you've come to the wrong place.
This is the one episode I'm allowed to make stupid jokes like that, so I'm going to be taking
it. Doesn't stop you fucking ever.
Yeah, but Zach cuts them, and there's the time.
Yes. The cutting room floor is strewn with the withered husks of Michael's jokes.
Michael's zingers.
Yeah.
It's like a Little Debbie factory with all those zingers on the floor. So this is our very first League of Ultimate Questions, a.k.a. LU Q&A. Mm-hmm. And we want to just start interacting with the fans more and getting to actually answer your questions, because it's a pretty weird game of D&D. And questions do come up about how we do things here. We've gotten many. And I assume we can just start by going into some.
Yeah, let's launch.
I've got some right in front of me. We got a fantastic email back in April from a devoted fan in Canada named Alan Reynolds.
It's such a good email.
This is a fucking thorough synopsis of their fandom and great questions. So we'll start with the first one. I see pictures of the minis and grid that someone, likely Law, posts on Facebook. I'm assuming this means that you are all in the same room. From the advertising and such, I'm assuming you're in Seattle? Question mark.
Very close.
It's pretty close.
It's pretty close. I mean, Portland is basically the epiglottis of Seattle.
You know, once I was... Oh, yeah, the epiglottis.
That was way too descriptive.
Those are way worse dangling appendages I could pick.
Nope, I'm out. Nope.
I mean, if you thought that was too much, just wait till you listen to the Cult of the Ma episode.
Yeah, so does everyone know each other? My efforts to create a show has met with some pushback simply because most people who play D&D locally are not entertainers, they are gamers. And notoriously, gamers will want to argue about rules if it's an option, which is not entertaining to an audience at all. Hear that? So I've been...
Did you glance at me when you
I
said
didn't.
That?
he might have glanced. I stared pointedly.
I looked through the veil at every listener out there. So I've been inviting friends that don't have a ton of role-playing experience but are theater actors for their day jobs. So their ability to improv and go with it has been much better. So yeah, I guess my first question is, how did you choose your cast and how well do you all know each other? It's an excellent question. Ooh. We did actually have an audition process, but it was mostly from friends of friends. Mm-hmm. We didn't like put it on Craigslist or anything. It was just kind of a call to action to be like, hey, does anyone know people who have a quick wit, D&D experience and are interested in being part of an entertainment project? And we auditioned almost 10 people. It wasn't like, a ton, but it was a fair bit.
I think it was like 8 or 9.
And we picked the cast we have. I mean, honestly, most of them would have been pretty great, but there was just a really good chemistry with this group. Some of us know each other through friends. Some of us know each other for, I think, in particular, Zach and Sam have a very long history of friendship.
Yeah.
Sam and I have been friends since we were 14 in high school.
D&D in the lunchroom.
In fact, Sam was my first GM. Sam was the first person to run any tabletop game for me.
That's right. I learned that in our last D20 questions.
Uh-huh.
And me and Michael work together with Orcs, Orcs, Orcs as some of the DMs that...
Sam was going to say something. I'm going to
I didn't...
Awesome. I was just going to be like, yeah, your first is always your best or something. It was just a thing.
Once you go Sam...
You can't go Bam.
Ram? You can't go Ram.
No? Okay.
Yeah.
No, Ram fits.
My first is always your best, Samantha. Too relevant.
When it comes to DMing, that is definitely not true.
Oh, no. Some of my early DMs are, well, dear friends of mine were children.
Yeah.
And run as well as children do. But yeah, me and Michael know each other. We are colleagues in Orcs, 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 both professional DMs at a pop-up restaurant thing that sells tickets and does a whole bunch of D&D. That's how we met. And me and Zach have known each other for about a decade or so, maybe more, through when we were both performers in the Rocky Horror Picture Show at the Clinton Street Theater.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, that has been like pushing on 10 years.
Because it's been like 4 years since I was even in the cast.
But we've only actually been friends for like 2 years.
No, we haven't actually, like, we were around each other and talked words in each other's direction frequently, but we weren't like buds. But it worked out that we wanted to both start a creative project at the same time. But no, Alante was our one audition that the first thing we had in our little side-by-side walkabout was he's the one.
Yeah.
Alante is a pick. He just had so much charisma that he brought.
Yeah, we actually met Alante through Chris Josie, who did some editing for us and who has helped us out a lot on the side. Thank you, Chris. Excuse me. Thanks, Chris motherfucking Josie. That's his full name.
It is.
And then it was probably like the best suggestion he could have given us, because like immediately we were like, okay, this is perfect.
Yeah, I got I rode Alante's coattails onto the show because we auditioned the same night. So
it's true.
But what I will say is I had a lot of fun during the audition. And actually, for me, the best part was before the audition even started, when we all just kind of like hung out, had a beer and just like talked.
We did do that. We had some brewskis at a bar.
That was like a big, that was actually one of the first things that we figured out that we liked somebody is when they were really social and friendly and had good jokes and stuff like that. And that was actually where all of you stood out is when you showed up, we had drinks. It was all just really fun. And you guys were really interesting.
Yeah, I personally judged what each of you ordered and how much you drank.
They liked my jokes at the bar, but when I make them on the show, they leave them on the cutting room floor.
Sam, all Sam ordered was a Jaeger nuke, which is basically where you take a can of Red Bull, pull it in, pour it into a bottle of Jaeger, and then just down the whole thing.
Oh my god, I don't even remember what I had.
I feel like that would greatly upset my stomach. I don't think I could
drink
that.
Do you
feel like
it might? Yeah.
It's basically just NyQuil.
Jaeger is medicine?
It is, though.
Yeah, fun fact, NyQuil is just Jaeger with dextromethorphan in it. That's it.
And
it's
no one has ever gotten sick from drinking a whole bottle of NyQuil.
Nope. Cool.
But yeah, that's how we know each other. And we are, in fact, in Portland, Oregon, and not Seattle. But they are, like I said, very close. Being that you're from Canada, that's a pretty solid guess.
Given the incredible racial handicap of being from Canada.
Wow. Do we have more questions?
We do.
From this person. So we will space them up because, boy, did they send us a rich bouquet.
Yeah, totally.
So sounds like Zach has some questions.
I do.
Pick a juicy.
I've actually gotten this a few times, but specifically, Tori asks, do we have any plans to interact with other teams? She's curious about them since early on we mentioned things about that.
Well, I guess I'll have to saddle that one as the Dungeon Master. Mm-hmm. So our goal is once we finish telling this current story with the Mortal Dawn and the League of Ultimate Questing and how they're involved with it, we definitely want to possibly have a new team come on and be the next section of the show. We also want to start having guest characters, one-time appearances from friends, family, whatever, people who are in the local gaming industry and want to have some presence with our show. And of course, the story, as the team becomes more known, in my mind, will definitely have more narrative involving other teams in the world. The other teams will become much more fleshed out. It's just right now, despite the fact that they're doing big, amazing things, they're still kind of nobodies in the spectrum of the LUQ because they're still novice ranked.
But despite how much play we get from Kip and Storm.
Oh, yes. While interesting things happen and they become topics of the news, they are still just a novice ranked team. And of course, they have to be super interesting in some way because they are the subjects of the story. But yes, the other teams will be coming up. Definitely, there will be more LUQ teams. Maybe someday we can have some kind of system where people out in the world can have their own teams and have their own rankings and things like that. That'd be a lot of fun. I don't see anything wrong with that in the slightest.
I just have to say that so far, my favorite team I've heard of is that like metal rock, all girl rock band, the Gas Thrash
Slash
Bash.
Gash Thrash Bash.
Yes.
And which is different every time.
Yes, it's set in a different order almost every time.
And honestly, I really hope that we do like a Scott Pilgrim style battle with them one day. Mm-hmm. Like that's my dream. That's my personal
team?
Dream.
Yeah. They're not LUQ team. They're just a really famous.
No,
I mean, we should still battle them anyway.
Do you even think that they have enough time to be a fucking metal band and a LUQ team? Come on.
Look, I mean, to be fair, Draxton's Death Machine sounds like a band.
It really does.
A lot of the other team names would be really cool, like post-metal bands or like prog rock.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, we're still young, but expansion is definitely on the horizon.
My name is Tal'Kadar. I'm the party barbarian. We've been adventuring for a long time, and sometimes I can't keep my rage up as long as I used to. I was diagnosed with a rage tile dysfunction. It affects 2 out of 5 barbarians my age. That's when I discovered Viagra. Longer, more satisfying rage is for me and my opponent. I'm always ready when my friends need me to bring the fury.
Ask your party cleric if Viagra is right for you. Contact an apothecary for any rages lasting more than 4 hours. We keep you raging hard on the battlefield.
Viagra, my anger will not be silenced.
This is another delicious question from Alan Reynolds. His question is setup. Most groups I know video stream on Twitch. Then the person editing just lifts the audio track from the stream, drops it into Avid or whatever your editing program is, and then puts it up on a podcast service. I'm an audio guy, and I really, really appreciate the LUQ as an audio-only experience. Maybe it's because I'm on a lot of night shifts and have earbuds in my ears a lot, or because I've been playing D&D for so long, but I much prefer to close my eyes and allow my mind's eye to sketch what you are all describing, rather than watch a stream of people describe what their characters are doing. So my question is, what does your setup look like? Does everyone have a clip mic, or is there a central mic in the middle of a table? Is your room designed for audio work, or do you specifically choose a place with good acoustics? Would you mind sending me a picture of how the gaming area looks while recording so people might be able to learn from your setup? My technical skills are limited, but one of my enthusiastic players is doing a theater tech degree and likely has access to gear we could use, if we could figure out a setup. I guess going hand in hand with that is why you chose for a pure audio-only experience. Was it easier for you guys due to technical know-how? Are people more comfortable role-playing without a camera on them? Which is totally valid. Well, I'm definitely going to drop that question off in Zach's lap because he is the arbiter of our techno goodies.
Yeah. So first thing I want to say more than anything else, do not think that you are limited by your tech. My brother and me started on freaking Rock Band mics. The only reason I decided to get equipment first is because I value audio quality rather immensely, and so I shelled out quite a bit to try and get my setup right.
He's a little obsessive.
Yeah, just a little bit. And to be fair, it does feel a little daunting to try and break into a new industry when you've got like just the worst equipment ever, and you're like, unless you have the most original and beautiful idea ever, then you want to make up for it with quality and good content. So that being said, we actually started with a Tascam 70D for our recording device itself. And then we have a bunch of MXL 770s, which we're still using for the mics. Mm-hmm. However, I had this real big problem because the Tascam only had 4 lines and we needed at least 5 in order to have a decent D&D game. So I ended up buying a mixer. Erroneously, by the way, because I didn't realize that a mixer would mix it all down to a single track.
Yes.
So there's a good period there where we couldn't, like, I couldn't, like, control people's audio levels specifically. I could only do them on the fly, like, while recording, which seriously hindered my abilities. So I ended up having to buy yet another device. But this beautiful beast, this most gorgeous creature, the Digital Porta Studio. I realize Porta anything automatically conjures images of taking a shit, but that's not what's happening here. this doesn't take the shit on the audio. Anyway, it's a DP, not double penetration. it's a DP. It's a DP24SD Tascam. This is a portable studio all on its own. It has 8 discrete tracks, phantom for all of them. It has a discrete volume and like equalizer controls, lots of knobs and buttons. It's got lots of knobs, things like that. If you don't like touch screens or you don't want to have to like try to like fiddle your way through this like impenetrable digital like environment. I absolutely love this device. It was also ridiculously expensive.
A little bit.
All of this was ridiculously expensive. And if you can't afford it, just get whatever you can, because it's just not worth it to put off creating good content.
Definitely. And so, other than that, it's like there's a headphone amplifier because we all need to monitor ourselves, and that's like used from eBay. So there's a mixture of brand new gear and some used stuff. Get what you get your hands on.
Exactly. Yeah. And honestly, and if you want a better idea of what this is without all the technical googa, basically there are 5 table mics. Law has a scissor stand, and then the rest of it's just simple cardioid condenser, you know, standing mics.
I just love to get scissored.
He does. Wow. We don't do lavaliers because lavaliers have a lot of annoying problems, little clip mics that you attach to your clothes. Mm-hmm. And there's just no way to do that without spending a huge amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great for like stage stuff, but for what we're doing, we sit pretty still and it's good.
Also from Tori, on a spectrum from role-playing to role-playing.
I love the jack-off motion.
Yeah, you're welcome. How would you rate this podcast?
I feel like this one's for the players.
And more importantly, what do you prefer in a given game?
Ooh.
So we'll start with Sam.
Yeah, it both is my preference and is my experience in this game that the role-playing... the
thank
drama.
You. That's
I'm
good.
Trying to put it in my voice. I don't know. Anyway,
well, it came across.
It was very
preferable.
Good.
Preferable. And what we're seeing. Yeah, we get to do a lot of interactions with the characters. We have whole sessions that tend to be more about the looking at the world and the people in it. Mm. But we do have, you know, session here and there that's just like just battling. What was it? Didn't we have one where it was almost two episodes in a row or something? Was it just a full episode? Anyway, we get to do a lot of role playing. That's the important part.
Michael?
For me, I prefer role play as a player, but also because I've been DMing for about 10 or 15 years. I don't even know at this point. I know the rules pretty well. And when I listen to podcasts and somebody botches a rule, I always notice. So I try and clarify rules when possible.
Yeah, and the best part is cutting all that out.
Right, yeah. That's, but exactly. Really, yeah, but it's Law's game and Law's world. And if Law doesn't care, that's totally fine. Zach prefers to have one authoritative voice on the rules, being Law, the actual dungeon master of this game. So I try to only do it if it's like a really big deal, or if it would be like advantageous for us to be like, yeah, this is going to kill us if we don't do this. So, but I prefer role play from a playing standpoint, just because honestly, it's more fun than arguing over rules the whole time.
You're just a crunch addict.
A little bit. Yeah.
I think we have a really good balance. One of my favorite things is whenever skill challenges come up, you like can audibly hear me sometimes like get really excited. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite things, because to me, it's like that direct middle ground. And especially for me, you know, role playing, I'm still getting used to it and still getting comfortable. But I really also like the technical stuff that the actual rolling of the dice is. It's almost like battles feel like figuring out puzzles to me. Mm-hmm. So I like it.
1 second, sorry. Mm-hmm. I just realized I wasn't supposed to use her last name, so I'm probably going to cut that out. Mm. As for me, I would say I tend to prefer, not just prefer, I will have entire, like, several game sessions in a row in my own GM'd games where it's just role-playing. Like, I will go, like, four sessions before a fight even occurs. So I'm fine with endless role-playing. But that being said, I feel like we've got a really good balance going on here. I wish that I spent more time, like, playing my character rather than driving the story. That's the only thing I see that I'd like to see more of, is like, I feel like we do a great job of role playing to drive the plot forward, but not a whole lot of role playing to role play. Mm-hmm. I want that sweet, sweet drama. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm all theater of the mind, man. Like, if a rule doesn't fit the world I'm doing, I don't give a shit. You can just throw that shit in the garbage. It's meaningless. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's here to have fun.
And I always feel like that's totally fine, but I want the DM to clarify that that's what they're doing, so that when I'm listening, I'm not like, but, and I go, oh, okay, they threw that out. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like when you're a kid, you know, and you're like, my force field stops that, and then the whole argument, that you need the rules to stop that.
Exactly.
Yeah, the double dare times infinity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my favorite part for the storytelling aspect, because I think all of us at heart are more story-driven, but we're also telling a story which involves characters accomplishing physical tasks and achieving ranks in questing, which involves them having to go and do fights and solve puzzles and things. And plus, you guys are listening to a 5e podcast. You're going to be hearing the 5e mechanics. I usually have a pretty good grasp on the rules of what's going on, other than like what saving throw a certain person has to make. But usually it moves pretty smoothly. Again, there's kind of like one episode here and there peppered in that's all fighting, but we try to have some pretty fun, exciting battles. And my favorite thing is to improvise a brand new NPC that everyone's going to fucking fall in love with, because I rarely plan character, like how they act as far as NPCs. I just kind of pull something right out of my ass, because I don't know who these guys are going to try to talk to, who they're going to go for, or what kind of questions they're going to ask. So characters like Philip and Regis are totally just on the fly. What are they going to sound like? I don't know. And once I say their first sentence, I know exactly what kind of person they are.
With one exception. And that was only because we were like, I'm not doing that accent.
Yes. There was one where I thought it wasn't an accent that I should do, so I immediately backpedaled into kind of an Irish, which is fine.
I actually really love it. It's like one of my favorite moments. It's just like the audible, like, oh, never mind.
And it's an accent I can do, but I in no way want to be like insensitive or sound like Absolutely. I'm trying to imitate something that I simply appreciate as a storytelling mechanic, but I can try to dodge it when I can.
That's what I like about you, Law. You're very sensitive to people's feelings.
I'd sure try.
Yeah.
As long as you make me aware of them, I will be sensitive to them.
That's totally great. Okay. What do you got?
One more question from our good friend in Canada. It's a very short and simple question, which is a great follow-up to what we just said. Reginald's voice. It's a modulator, right?
That's my favorite.
I wish every listener was in the room for that one moment, because my eyes went big, yeah. My mouth dropped, and everyone else at the table had the same reaction.
Yeah, the first...
That is happening.
let's let Law do his thing, and then I'll add what you just said after that.
No, totally. If it is, I am so thorough. If it isn't, I'm so thoroughly impressed. There's so much good voice work that I could gab about every character, but Reginald's throw me for a loop every time, trying to figure out how you pitch it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, nope, that's just a voice that I do and have done since I was a lad, the robot voice.
Do it for us here.
It's very simple. I just kind of condensed the throat muscles and speak in a tone that I have from listening to Microsoft Sam for many years, saying words like chimichanga or I like to touch pots.
And just to give you guys a heads up, so there are only a few moments of modulation that I'll use. Every once in a while, I might, like, for example, when we do the grand proving, I modify Kip's voice over the intercom to make it sound like it's a little distant. Or when it makes sense, I might add some reverb or something like that. But it's super, super, super rare. Like, I've done it maybe three times. There's only one other voice that I modify, and that is Storm. And that is usually because I can't get my voice all together that deep. Or if I can, I tend to have this really bad habit of fucking it up halfway through the sentence and then going back to my normal pitch, and so I end up having to go in and edit that.
And I had a friend who also asked, like, it's weird that you guys, I mean, I love that we don't do like any sound editing. I think that's great. We're not going to add like music or sword clangs and stuff like that, because it's just, you know, it's a D&D game. But someone asked me, like, how come the one thing that we did was add animal noises? And I was like, no, I'm just, I guess, weirdly good at making animal noises.
Oh, yeah. Every Morty sound you hear is Law snuffling into his mic, and it's amazing.
Yeah, the owlbear noise was phenomenal as well. Yeah. I remember that.
I just like to make critter noises. It makes sense to me.
It's kind of too good.
Or the lasher cat.
Yeah. But no, yeah, we try not to add anything. I think we added like a couple of sounds during the brand proving to the background of like Kip and Storm. We kind of take liberties with.
Yeah, Kip and Storm is between the sessions. Like, that's not us playing D&D. That's us fleshing out the story. So we can take a little bit of liberties with, you know, ambient noises and stuff, because it's really just the bread of the sandwich.
In the flashback to Haruthax talking to their patron, my patron's voice was modulated with a little echo, wasn't
only
it?
Only to make it easier for me, because I can definitely pitch myself that low.
Right. Yeah, I've heard you pitch low before, but I was thinking it.
I did add
little
some echo because we were in a cave and I wanted it to sound very dream state. But yeah, that one definitely had some reverb modified.
Yeah, Locke can go very low, I've noticed when we play. But
which leads me actually to another thing, the question of, are we scripted? We did that a lot.
It was the best compliment I've ever gotten on the show, really.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So first off, we do script Kip and Storm. That is deliberate. We want them to sound like they're reading from a teleprompter, or like they're just kind of, they have these established personas, and it gives us a little bit of control over the direction of the overarching story.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what's going on, and I honestly don't even usually read the scripts until the day Law has me record Storm with him.
And I know going into it, like, I write an idea, and then we just kind of improvise on the spot. It's like, okay, we're about to record this section. How would they sound? What jokes are they going to make?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of improv involved in their recording, because we are the characters.
Definitely.
But there's definitely an idea, because it's like, we find out what happens in the episode. They will comment on it. We decide on the spot how they comment on it.
As for normal play, though, nobody here is scripted at all in even the slightest way, unless they specifically wrote something down they wanted to say before. The only exception is that if somebody delivers a line that's really good and it just sounds terrible, I might ask them to give it to me again so that we can keep it.
I was going
to
say, Law usually doesn't even have notes. The only time so far that I've seen him with notes was during the grand proving. He was having to keep score.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you know, Law's pretty much, you know, got an idea in his head and running on the fly.
Yeah, I just have like people's names listed down so I don't forget them, and of course my maps, and sometimes a chart for criticals and fumbles and tracking hit points, but I don't have any dialogue or anything written down. I just kind of, what would sound good.
On the note of the grand proving, I have another question from Garrett Yates. Is there a season? Is there a clear season ending and beginning time in the League of Ultimate Questing? How is it defined? And when will we as a group see that?
Ah, well, that's a great question, because one of the best things about our current method of storytelling is the actual, like, in stone mechanics of the LUQ are still slightly nebulous, so they can evolve to match the story pacing.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, there is basically each year there is a new season of the League of Ultimate Questing, which is either teams renewing their ranking or new teams joining in the League of Ultimate Questing,
right.
Which takes place at the beginning of summer. And in my world, there's no months. There are just four seasons, each one divided by a gray period known as the Dead Moon. And each season is dictated by the color of the moon for that season. So you'll see people say in timelines like, well, it took a whole season. And the seasons don't always last the same amount of time. Like, summer can be anywhere from, you know, 60 days to 140 days. Like, it's somewhat nebulous.
Interesting.
On the topic of LUQ seasons, though, is the LUQ year round, or is there like an off season? Like most sports will have like playoffs and then an off season for a couple months mm-hmm. before it starts up again.
So usually the would be the end of spring is kind of like a half season of downtime.
Okay.
Like that for renewing things, rebuilding grand proving grounds. But I mean, it could change every year based on how many new teams there are, when that takes place, or if it exists at all.
And long term, I know we talked about the idea of creating a very ironclad rule set for League of Ultimate Questing mm-hmm. so that we could have future teams play in it.
Sure. And like there are rules for like how to pass the grand proving. Like there was actually a system in place for what score they received based on what they did each turn. It wasn't very complicated, but it was trackable.
Yeah.
But you know, you can't get too bogged down in a lot of the in stone stuff if you want to tell a good story. And if I ever like accidentally give a date wrong or something, I'm sure if we ever catch on huge, then people will call me on that. And I accept that fault, but I'm not perfect. And I want to tell the story that's in my head. And sometimes that doesn't match what I accidentally said on the fly. I've got one last question from Alan, and it's another pretty straightforward one, is schedule. This is one of my biggest ones. With people being actors and people having jobs, projects like this are a huge time investment and a labor of love for everyone involved. So far, our best schedule has been set aside one day a month, try to do 4 or 5 hours of stuff, and then we try to cut that into episodes. I don't know how often you guys play, but I'm very interested.
So basically, whenever we're doing any kind of recording, we usually sit down for kind of similar to what you're talking about. We sit down for mm-hmm. 4 to 5. Well, actually, it usually ends up being closer to like 7 or 8 hours. We record about 5-6 hours of actual audio. That ends up being between 4 and 5 episodes of chapters, basically. And that's how we get our chapter definitions, is by making sure that each sit down is one chapter wherever possible.
Mm-hmm. There's been very few times where we've had to cross over by one episode or whatever, because it kind of gives us that same in room. You know, energy of this is what's happening in the chapter, and then we're done with it. And yeah, once a month, then me and Zach will kind of desperately get together whenever we can to record things like Kip and Storm yeah. or other projects that we might be working on. So we're very much traveling in trying to find time to do those other ones. But sure. For the actual players, like the people who are going to have to invest their time for this long thing, yeah, once a month.
Absolutely, yeah. And one of the things that we made sure of when we first like kind of started recruiting people is we pulled them aside, and as we made the offer, we were like, do you think you can do this consistently? Mm-hmm. I need to know that if we give you enough time to plan it, that you will make it. And everybody has been so good. Like, I think the only time we missed anything was early on, and it was because of just something we couldn't control. I think Law had like really super nasty throat lurgy and just couldn't do the voices.
I had strep throat.
Yeah. So it was real bad. But, you know, barring emergency situations, which usually we actually have backup plan for, like, if we need to, we can do a weekend or we can move it to another day. But yeah, everyone's been so good about showing up and everything.
Mm-hmm. And I think on that note, just like keeping communications key, like we all have, you know, our, you know, phone numbers, we have Discord, we have a whole bunch of avenues. And so if you're having trouble, that's what I would recommend.
We will also be making our Discord public soon.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We'll have channels for the fans to interact with us, the Slapdashers.
Which will be very exciting.
What are we called? Are we the Slapdashing?
The Slash Dash.
What about the Slappers? We just call them the Slappers.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
I don't know about that.
The Slappy D's.
Slappy D's.
Submit your suggestions for what you should be called to Slap the Dash on Twitter.
Yeah, please hashtag us Slap the Dash or hashtag LUQ, anything.
Just tag us on Twitter all the time.
Can you talk to us?
I'm just for 1 second think about someone else.
It's late at night, and you're all alone. Do you need a support companion? Has the music of your heart gone mute? Call 1-900-SEX-BAR.
Sex-BAR.
Our tantalizing troubadours and mesmerizing minstrels will give your love life inspiration.
Sex-BAR.
We'll serenade you, read you poetry, and roll seduction check after seduction check.
Sex-BAR.
All our bards are just like their charisma scores, 18 and over.
Sex-BARD.
1-900-SEX-BARD. We'll hit on literally anyone.
Sex-BARD.
Hey there, tasty babies. Law here. No ad this week, but I just wanted to take a minute to thank you all for listening to the League of Ultimate Questing, and we hope you're enjoying this week's LU Q&A, and hope we can do more in the future. We know there's a lot of D&D podcasts out there, but we're really glad that you're choosing ours right at this very moment. And we hope you tell your friends too, because we'd love to keep doing this and be able to produce this content for you guys all the time. And a quick shout out to some of the people who've been interacting with us on social media as of late. There's Chris Fougere, which I hope I am pronouncing properly. I'm pretty sure that's French. John Hunt, Alan Reynolds, and of course the Danes, who make up a wonderfully curious percentage of our listeners. And everyone else out there, please stay in touch. We love to hear from you. Since we started a new website for our content, there's been a couple of issues with Google Play and Spotify updating, but we've done everything we can on our end, and we hope the issues are resolved as soon as possible. In the meantime, you can always download and listen to new episodes right on the website, theluq.com. We're launching a new project this week called D20 Questions, where me and Zach interview special guests in the gaming community and make total asses of ourselves talking about game theory and the things that annoy us. Our Patreon's going live soon, so keep an eye out for that, and if you haven't hopped on, our 1 year anniversary for Slapdash contest is on Twitter, so you got to get over there, like, share, and tweet it once you follow us, and you could be entered to win $100 worth of awesome gaming loot, like 5 handmade LUQ stone coasters from Gaming Gear, a magnetic dice jail and wooden condition trackers from Ida Woodworks, and a beautiful set of dark silver and red metal dice, which I have personally imbued with some mystical DM luck. Crunchy, sweet new episodes of the LUQ come out every Monday, and bonus content every Friday on social media. It's been an exciting year, and we're so glad that you're along for the ride. Now let's get back to the episode.
Dungeons can be delved, and monsters slain, but what about the last great adventure? Hi, I'm Stormclad Thundertone. There comes a day in every hero's life when they stop and ask themselves how long they can go on. How long before they are felled by the greatest enemy of all, time. We can't all die gloriously on the battlefield, but for those who lived, there's Legendary Acres.
I knew happily ever after was too good to be true, and the townsfolk could only hear the whine about the Tarrasque and the Darren's Instant Fortress so many times before they just tuned it out. I wasn't about to be some wrinkly old has-been, boring the ears off of youngins. So I took my untold riches and checked into Legendary Acres.
Don't wait for some young punk to get lucky, making a name for himself as the villain who slew the Herald of the Unblinking Eye. Legendary Acres exclusively employs prospective and recovering heroes, young men and women who will happily soak up decades or centuries of wisdom and experience.
These boys have never heard the exploits of the Marigold Mistress. They blush like young ladies.
For those with a little fight left in them, we offer the Twilight Gauntlet package, with custom dungeons, special monster encounters during outdoor time, and a relaxed rule set.
They never said I couldn't steal from that old paladin's room. If he wants the amulet of the thrice burned back, he's gonna have to find me first.
The other night I grabbed my cloak, and before I knew it, the damn thing had its teeth in my neck.
A cloaker at my age. I still got it.
And for the particularly long-lived, or those who just want peace, the Tranquil Gardens have an endless Arcadian bounty, with domesticated fae, with just the right amount of mischief. Of course, we keep fae away in every breathtaking cottage, just in case.
I'm 1,090 years old. I just want to be left alone. But at least I'll get to see dozens of these old humans leave through the back door before I check out.
For some, fading into legend comes when you least expect it. For the rest of us, there's Legendary Acres.
But no, we want to get more followers on Twitter. If we can get 200 by the end of June, I mean, and considering Instagram. How huge our listens are, the fact that we've got like 50 Twitter followers,
right?
We're just not good at it, I guess.
So this has been kind of a record-breaking month so far with crazy increase in our listeners and in consistency, and it's just kind of weird to see how much we're growing. But honestly, if you guys want us to grow more and if you want us to have more resources and be able to keep doing this, the best thing you can do is reach out on Twitter, share things. Hashtagging is super, super, super useful. And like it is invaluable to have people like using our hashtags and using our @ and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Same with Instagram as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you don't want to do all that, you just want to look at pretty pictures, be sure to check out our Instagram. Mm-hmm. Law has done amazing, you know, painted miniatures and whatnot, and we post a bunch of stuff there too.
Do what we can.
Yeah,
totally.
Dan the Man asks, What is everyone's entertainment background?
Oh, well, that's a good question.
Who's up first?
Me! I'm up first.
Yeah.
It's me.
Yay!
Yay!
I played D&D a lot for a while. Before this game, there was a huge hiatus, though. I think the last game I played was with Zach. When was that?
Like 4 years ago? Oh, 5 years
actually,
ago?
Actually, no. I was tricked into playing Yes. Tricked into playing a D&D advanced D&D game with like a bunch of 70-year-old
hippies. Why are
you
cringing?
It was so bad. They were like, you should try a monk. A female monk. And I was like, yeah, I'll do this. And it was so unfortunate. I was so weak. I was just like, I don't know. And the other thing is that I'm impatient and they're like old and they're, you know, slow about things. And I was like, roll the dice, fight the things. And so every time there was some kind of exciting event going on, you know, there's like harpies or something, I would.
One second. What? You were talking about harpies? So hold on. So what's your entertainment background?
Yeah. Okay. My entertainment.
Because as much as I want to hear more about the geriatric adventures of Samantha and Dungeons and Dragons, I'm really more curious about how you.
Yeah. So my actual entertainment background. I haven't done much in quite a while in that too. I think the last thing I was like high school.
You were in a band.
Oh,
like a couple years ago. Like,
okay, if that counts as entertainment, I was a backup singer for a backup slash. You know, when you're like singing for real, but it's not really real. Like, there's a guy who's more important than you. Whatever that's called.
You weren't the headliner.
I was not the headliner.
I think whether it counts as entertainment or not depends on how good the band was, right?
We got to play at like Saturday Market and some pubs. They only paid us in drinks most of the time. Sometimes I'd get like $40 my way.
It counts.
Yeah, that's the by popular demand feature that bards have.
Even if you're just busking, you're still doing performance.
All right, cool. It was like a funk band,
nice.
And they were like, whoa. We want you to sound like Janis Joplin, and I was like, all right, cool.
No, I don't. Hold on, let me go fuck my throat into oblivion.
I did smoke a lot.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that was me.
Michael?
I was in theater in middle and high school, but I stopped doing theater about midway through high school because the director and I didn't get along great. Mm-hmm. She said I had no emotion in my voice, and I disagreed, and it got kind of ugly. And I was like, all right, I'm done with this nonsense. I had a very brief foray on Twitch where I was streaming, and then I moved somewhere that my internet could not hack it. And then I got married or had a girlfriend and then got married. Not the other way around.
I got married and then we started dating.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just kind of lost the time for that. But I've been playing D&D for a long time and DMing for quite a while as well. So I'm used to that kind of style of entertaining as well.
Sure. Alante?
I feel weird because I'm of the vein of like, you name it, I've tried it a little bit.
Are we talking about theater?
Burlesque.
Yeah, definitely. Theater. Yeah. So, I've done a bunch of different things. I've done theater. I was in a band for a bit. I've done singing. I've done burlesque.
Is that on film?
I do have videos, yes.
That will be one of our Patreon.
I was going to say, when we launch the Patreon.
Oh, no. Okay, I guess this is happening.
Or maybe Discord. We could put it on Discord, maybe. Yeah.
And I've also done weird, cool forays in, like, the modding world. So my voice is out there in the original Dragon Age in a mod.
Ooh.
So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think I actually probably have the least experience here. I did a couple of stage plays in like middle school and high school and then D&D. And that's like basically it.
Well, your YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but that doesn't really count. That's basically the same as this project for all intents and purposes.
Also, I think your life tends to look like a performance. I'm always like, did he rehearse that?
Oh, yeah.
Are you sure you're not just always in a character somewhere?
I've been told that I am an extraordinarily theatrical person,
yes.
which translates apparently pretty well into podcasting.
That tracks.
If I may blow myself for a second here. And also, I did do some stage performance at the Rocky Horror Picture Show, as Law mentioned earlier, where we met. And I was the criminologist because I had very little coordination for like dance moves and stuff.
I thought you were gonna say neck.
I had so little neck. Anyway, moving on. And Law, what's your experience?
There's a list. I mean, obviously starting D&D when I was just a babe. But since then,
you're still a babe, Law.
Oh, thank you. Blush. What was I talking about? No. I started performing in like orchestra and stuff throughout middle school. In high school, I got an academic letter in choir. I had 4 or 5 years of theater. My senior year was mostly spent working in Photoshop and directing plays for my local theater. They still do an annual performance of the script I wrote for a high school stage version of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
No shit.
They still use all the costumes and shit I made because my senior year was very not productive academically, but very productive entertainment-wise.
Like most senior years are, honestly.
Tends to be, yeah. I was a radio DJ for a few years. I have a lot of music background. I used to host karaoke, and I was also in the Rocky Horror Picture Show for 10 years, and while usually that doesn't translate much into vocal performance, I was the host of the show, so I was literally yelling into a mic every Saturday night and entertaining as many people as I could.
Mm-hmm. There were a few in the back who weren't paying attention.
The cast. Other than that, just, you know, writing. I have my published module, and I've been fucking around with writing stories, you know, since I was old enough to learn keyboard stuff.
Nice. So here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of tools do you have behind the screen, and what kind of equipment do you use?
I don't use a screen.
Okay.
I like to roll in front of people. I have a dice tray, which is completely optional. I like it because it makes my dice not go flying while we're recording. And I have a notebook. Each game, I have about 2 or 3 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. And in that notebook is just a collection of things like maps for my world and some notes on regions that I might need to pull up in case I forget something.
But there is one set of tools that Law always has, is always detailedly prepared, and he is inundated with.
I have a lot of miniatures. And
okay. Way to say that with as little fanfare as possible.
Just a couple.
I have a documentably concerning number of miniatures, perhaps. No, it's actually not. I know people who are much worse, but I do have a fairly robust collection. I got obsessed with collecting when I was probably with my first job at like 15. And I started playing Warhammer and other games. That was my first like collection of miniatures. I was already playing D&D, but like actually stockpiling them. And since then, most of those armies are like somewhere in Montana in the basement. But I still have some. I specifically played undead and vampires and dark elves so I could use my Warhammer armies in my D&D games.
That's awesome.
That's smart.
But I just collect a lot. I like getting into terrain. I do more of that lately. I've been trying to find cool things on like Etsy, like cool dungeon stuff. I used to craft my own, but I just do not have time for that or a good workspace. But yeah, love my minis, and you can see all the photos on our website.
Yeah, every orcs before the game starts, everybody always messages Law to get loaners from his miniature library of, hey, Law, do you have a da, 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 da.
And I love doing it. It's like, if I've been investing in this since I was a kid, other people getting to use it makes the investment so much more valuable.
We should get a picture of your miniature library at some point, the shelf and the just...
Yeah, it's all boxed up now for organizing. I mean, it's still on the shelf. It's just I have them in totes. There was a plans of perhaps getting a cat one day, and that's not good for a shelf full of tiny, fragile things.
Not so much.
Yeah, when my wife has the baby, it's going to be very hazardous.
They love to get up on those upper shelves.
Yeah, I'm just thinking dice and minis and everything all over the house. I'm going to have to be very careful.
So this question is from Dave Mlodnov. I hope I got that right. Mlodnov.
Who's it? Who Law and I know from Orcs?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Great guy.
There you go.
Big fan.
This is a question for the future Q&A episode. That's us. Hey. That's what we're doing right now.
That's the current day one.
The multi-part question is for Philip from the Oilstone Market in Tirilli. It is asked by a fan, an LUQ fan living in Lione, who has been following the Immortal Dawn's exploits. Oh, well, now I've got to do a voice.
Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm. If you want, Dave, if you'd like to.
Philip, now that the Mortal Dawn has rescued you from being horribly mutated, are you considering a career as an adventurer? Maybe one day the Grand Proving and or maybe one day facing the Grand Proving and joining the League like your saviors. If not, what are your career goals? Perhaps academia. P.S. I hope that your friends are feeling better.
Oh, fuck me. That's actually a pretty good Dave voice. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's really not.
Oh, beans, cheese, and jeepers. Why is everybody always asking me about my ding-dong future? I'm just a kid trying to work a regular 9-to-5. No, I'm not going to join a stupid League of Ultimate questing ding-dongs. I don't want to get bonked by monsters all day. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. What am I going to do for it? I'm going to find some rich old bird who wants to smooch all the time, and when she kicks a bucket, I'm going to be loaded. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh, my shout out so to my friend Kyle, who can't stand Philip's voice and was so excited to be done with Philip.
Hey, Kyle, you peek a butthole. If you ever come to Trilly, I'll give you a kick right in the egg bags.
Thank you so much for that.
That is beautiful. Okay, so I think this is a good opportunity for us to go around the table and see if any of us have questions for each other or for Law about the world and etc.
And I have the right to refuse to answer if it will spoil any story stuff.
I mean, that seems fair.
So I have a general question to the team.
Way to just put yourself in front of everybody else, Alante.
He's the face.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're
and alphabetically, he is first.
Yeah, I am. Wait.
Yeah, because we do everything
real name. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yes. So I am curious about how each of us are very similar or very different to our characters. Like, where is the overlap and where is the like part that we struggle with each of us?
Are we still going alphabetical?
Yeah. Let's go. Sam, you go ahead.
Yeah. Sam.
Yeah. So I'm definitely similar to Arvid in that I have a constant need for approval and
wow,
horny for honor.
I'm so horny for honor, and I need to touch everyone all the time. And and I think mostly just that I'm incredibly strong and I could probably beat your dad up.
That's true.
We should actually speaking of touching things, we should post a picture at some point of Sam's fidget items. every game she brings a new squishy thing to play with.
Sure.
I honestly don't know what I have in common with the half alligator dragonborn medicine witch person. That's not me. I may have picked a character that is as different from me as I could, just to kind of explore things that I will probably never experience in my actual life.
Who is your patron in real life?
I don't have one. I'm way too broke to have a patron.
That's the best time to get a patron.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
If anybody is looking for people to sponsor.
Or anything. Anything is looking for.
If you're looking for a fresh soul.
Yeah.
And you have wealth and power to trade.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Alante?
So how Chris and I are similar is that we both have had traumatic stuff that we deal with. And that's part of what I love about this character is exploring that a bit more. And the places that we differ is that I find Chris to be kind of more even overall in terms of mood and emotion and whatever versus me in real life where I can be all over the place or blah, blah, blah. Even in my voice, you'll hear it like every, what, fourth syllable we discovered. Like I just go, So things like that.
This might actually be a better question for you, Samantha. In what ways am I similar to Artyom?
Oh boy. Ooh. Oh gosh. You definitely don't take direction well from anyone.
Holy shit. Okay. Pull no punches. Maybe I should cut that out.
Do not. It's a good thing about you, and it's probably a good thing about Artyom. We sometimes get caught in analysis paralysis situations, and then Artyom's just like, do it, fuck.
And I'm frequently just saying, do it, fuck.
Pretty much. I don't know. No, you got a thing. You got a thing, you're like, bam.
I'd say we're both pretty impulsive.
Impulsive, that's the one.
Yeah. I tend to do what I want based off of what I think is the best choices, course of action. And I think one thing that we definitely share in common is that we both think that our way is the best way.
Oh, yeah.
And even if it is, that is not something everybody else wants or agrees with.
But correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like you in real life is a bit more like empirical. Like you've already like have the data and all that, like when you make your choice versus Artyom's. I'm not sure if I get that sense from him.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Artyom just he just goes with what it makes sense. Like he's in that moment. He's like, this makes sense right now. And I'm going to do this right now. Mm-hmm. One thing that I am not is decisive. I tend to be a little indecisive unless I'm directing people. So in my personal choices, I tend to be a pretty inconsistent and just kind of wishy-washy.
Law, do you have anything in common with your characters?
Yeah, like
I was specifically going to say, I can't really answer this question because I have an infinite number of characters at any given time.
What about Maven? The closest one to the team.
Do you have a self-insert character in the show?
I guess, yeah. I mean, Maven is kind of my voice on the team, I suppose. Either that or Reginald or Morty. Mm-hmm. And I'll just go with all three. I guess the ways I relate to Morty are that I am Lorge. I like pets and just snuggles.
Sure.
Reginald, I like to show up unexpectedly and answer questions. And Maven, I like to see that people that I am involved with are successful.
Aww, that's really beautiful.
How are ways in which your personality manifests in your GMing?
I like to be very... I want people to fill in the gaps of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to put something in my mind that instantly becomes canon because they like the idea of how it sounds.
I like that.
I thrive and thirst for other people's flavors that they want to incorporate with their character. As long as they don't break like the game or things the way they're built, like I am very encouraging of that stuff.
Nice. Yeah. What about like where are your boundaries? Where are when you say like no to something? Like what are those?
I mean, because we're going to be listened to by a lot of people, there is a degree of accuracy to the rules I want to maintain,
mm-hmm.
Especially like turn-based things or action economy things like that. Because changing any of that will very quickly break the mechanics. 5e, while it does have a lot of guidelines, is very fine-tuned. There's a very clear reason for all the reasons you can or can't do that. Because if you change it, it does dramatically change a lot of things. And it might not feel that way in your head, but in practice, it'll probably come out. Mm-hmm. So I just like to be careful with it. Little things, not a big deal. Like deciding that you might need to roll for something because I want to narratively know how well you do at it. Not necessarily there is a large degree of failure, but if you really kill it, that's part of the story. That becomes some success that you have done on the team, on the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanna sell that.
So does anybody else have any questions for the other players?
Yeah.
Okay, give it to me.
Give it to me.
Oh God.
This is a thirsty episode.
It's a hot day.
It's Wednesday. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, so anyway, where are you all from and where have you been besides where you're from and where we are now?
Gotcha. I guess I'll start this time since we've kind of been starting with Sam a lot. My brain just immediately wanted to rhyme with Camelot somehow, and I'm just not going to do that.
I have the Spamalot song stuck in my head now.
We're not doing that.
I'm not singing it, but it's
okay.
There.
I'm putting the kibosh on that as fast as I can. So the funny thing about Artem is he literally was a slave, and then he got out, and all he did was go, Drogendrav, surface world. Join the league. That's it. His whole life has been adventuring or living underground.
We started off in Leone.
Leone, yeah. In the village, the port city of Lucinilli.
Very similar, actually, to Artyom. Heruthax grew up in a swamp in Danmir and was kind of driven out by an unfortunate incident, which led to them their patron contacting them. And headed to Lucinilli to sign up for the league in a bid to acquire more power, basically.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And Herathax's people are from a almost traveling city in the north. A particular clan of Black Dragonborn were nomads in that they left to claim their own land, of course, because the desert is not great for the swampy Dragonborn. So they kind of went off and found their own little patch of land.
Alanto.
Yes. So, Christ was born in Alcara and was given up to House Cubis, which is actually, oddly enough, one of the better fates of people born there.
Mm-hmm.
And then going from there, he was kind of, let's just say, sold to you will find out someday, and ended up in Danmir in the city of Andesine.
Mm-hmm.
And he has done a lot of traveling since then, seeing the world, learning people, learning his ways.
So have you been everywhere?
Not everywhere. I feel like there's a lot of places that that are very, first, not fond of Alcara, mm. And then definitely not fond of Christ or people of a magical nature or what have you. So he's kind of hyper aware of his surroundings in that way.
All very accurate. And well said. None of you have been to Camaras, though, I will say that.
What about you, yes, Arvid?
Arvid, born in Dornheim, in mountainous region, number 5. I'm not sure, actually. Anyway, and probably spent most of his time there until he had to leave his tribe and then went straight to Leone to try to join a team, any team. Found you guys. Yeah. Best friends.
Besties.
So.
Co-workers.
That's the closest thing I have to friends.
Aww, that's too real. That's so
sad. Well, you've got Morty now. So.
That's right, Morty.
All right. Any other questions for the players?
So I'm curious how, for the other players, how your character's background influences the way that you interact with the world and the league itself.
Mm.
Let's start with Alante.
Oh, well, yeah. when it comes to, you know, day-to-day or people and sometimes his own group, I hate to say, he's definitely guarded and often waits and looks and waits for like either like an opening or something like that. Instead of going out like much of his other fellow members, he likes to stay and watch and then act. And how that works with the LEQ is it's kind of like a growth thing for him and also a means to an end.
Mm-hmm. Sam?
Well, being rejected from my tribe but having lived all of my life there previously, I'm definitely, you know, very, very much a soul searching, like, I'm going out to find myself. I'll travel the world. Arvid is, that is, not me.
That's Arvid. How Arvid sounds.
Yeah, <it's> Arvid. Flawless Arvid.
So, yeah, looking for a new, like, family clan situation, and then also just, like, aghast at all of the differences in the world, that, you know, going into a big city after living in the mountains my whole dang life. Mm. It's pretty intense, yeah.
Well, with Artyom, I mean, mostly being a slave, but also being a Drav specifically, they have this very, well, I mean, most of the time when you're dealing with Drav, they're extremely deceitful and vile kind of people. And so in general, he doesn't trust anybody. The idea that if any word got out for any infraction, you could just be beaten in public to death and that was it. So it's kind of like he just doesn't trust anyone except family. And the idea of accepting foreigners or strangers or people who aren't his actual birth family as anything except coworkers just seems absurd to him. And so every person is inferior or obnoxious or a threat.
Mm. Dark.
Yeah, that's actually a strong parallel between Artyom and Haruthax, which it entertains me that our backgrounds are very different, but our characters end up being very similar in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Haruthax grew up very, very sheltered. The only interactions that they had was basically with their parents, who were very old when they had them, and then people from neighboring villages who would come consult Haruthax as a medicine person, and then eventually, kind of like people did, decided Haruthax was a witch and drove them out of their home. So the only people Haruthax really ever trusted eventually turned on them and drove them out, and as a result, Haruthax is kind of reserved and guarded because until they decide, like with you guys, that you're basically family, they don't know if they can trust you, and they don't want to be driven off again like that.
Mm. Insightful.
Yeah.
Mine's really silly, but I want to know what everyone's character wanted to be when they grew up.
That's okay. Cute. I love it.
Sam?
I wanted to follow in my mother's footsteps and be leader of the clan, but I definitely am not going to have that dream come true.
Haruthax, because of the way that they grew up being so sheltered, never really got over that sort of childhood dream. Haruthax definitely wanted to be a dragon when they grew up, like a real dragon.
Chris kind of wanted to be like a kind of a class clown type of thing, but looking out, he saw a lot of suffering out there, so... when he grows up, he wants to somehow heal that.
Growing up, actually, Artyom wanted to be a woman. Frequently, there would be, you know, delegates and you know, diplomatic entities coming from the other hives, where they weren't necessarily where everybody was matriarchal. And so when he would see these really elegant and powerful women that everybody would bow to and obey and listen to, the idea that he could have that kind of control, that kind of authority, got him very excited. And that was what he wanted to be. And then when he grew up and he did some research about the nature of bodies and things like that, and he understood more about them, he actually became obsessed with anatomy and whatnot. And that's actually how he became a doctor and got into medicine.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So I think for a nice wrap up, we can kind of do a quick chapter synopsis to get people caught up and so they can see what's happened thus far in the story.
Sure. So we're going to break this down by chapter so that you guys have a clear moment of breaking if you haven't gotten there yet. If you're not interested in this, feel free to just cut out. There probably won't be that much interesting stuff going on after this point. But if you haven't listened before, this is a great way to catch up to where we are. I figure we're going to end this at the end of the most recent chapter, which at the time of recording was chapter 5.
I'm a dwarven shield maiden of Remitex. I live to slay my foes and defend the Onyx Citadel. I shed the blood of orcs and goblins by the bucket on the battlefield. But sometimes the moon goddess shines her light on me and it becomes my time to bleed. Heavy combat, heavy armor, heavy flow. That's when I reach for Clan Pax Mithril. Twice the absorption, twice the durability. Clan Pax Mithril. Leave the bloodshed to your enemies.
So, chapter one is the Mortal Dawn meeting for the first time before they even got that title. Each of them being from different corners of the Five Kingdoms, merged in the port city of Lucinilli because that is where the sign-up for the new season of the League of Ultimate Questing was being held. They did a series of jobs for different people who could be potential patrons or funding backers for their franchise of questing. A lot of those were intertwined and had some political intrigue tied in with them. They solved some puzzles, and they realized along the way that someone was kind of one step ahead of them, kind of almost putting a piece in the puzzle before they got there. And when this chapter ended, they met a very strange fellow named Maven, who had kind of put all of the quests together in a neat little package to drop in their lap and presented them an offer of becoming their new patron, showing as a test to himself that he had done all of this research and had put all this work together to prove his value and his ability to, you know, connect the dots in social situations. And that is where we ended chapter one. For chapter two, it began with a battle on the deck of the ship, which was one of the quests that they were searching for, was this missing ship. A group of rogues that they had angered in their earlier quests tried to assassinate them, and they learned that Maven was what is called a false facer and can kind of transform his shape. They were given a very shitty apartment above a fish refinery, which was kind of their base of operations. And they engaged in getting new gear based on the money they had made from their previous quests, and they tried to take the Grand Proving, which was a series of tests they must take in order to actually join the League of Ultimate Questing. They did very well. Their final score was over 90, and they became one of the new members of the team, and that's most of Chapter 2, is them taking the Grand Proving and becoming an actual official team. And that is where they got their team name, the Mortal Dawn. Chapter 3 began with them getting their very first League quest. They were sent to the village of Turilli in southern Leone to solve a problem that some of the local villagers had become mutated, specifically some teens and youth. As they went to investigate, they realized that there was a little bit of underground drug activity happening and the teens were involved, and the side effect thereof was this new form of mutation that was starting to cause them great harm. They had some fun intrigue with some of the locals, they solved some riddles from a very strange elf, and they found a old alchemist's lab out on a lake, which was the base of operations for these illegal drug dealers, and they resolved it and brought the man to justice by death. In Chapter 4, the Mortal Dawn got their second big quest, in which they were to escort a wagon full of meat to the Alcaran nobles who were suffering with a bit of a food shortage. In doing so, they encountered some bandits in the Breathless Sands who wanted to steal their cargo, And during the battle, the entire field was consumed by a massive, gargantuan beast of unfathomable size. They awoken inside the beast and navigated their way through his entrails and the bits inside of him, very dungeon-like, to a society known as the Village of Craw, where there's an actual thriving humanoid culture living inside of this beast, worshipping it as a god. They were given a very difficult ultimatum at one point during a ritual, in which they were to either stay forever and become servants of the Great Maw, or become sacrifices to the Great Maw in his strength. They chose the latter, being, well, then, they chose to fight for their lives and escape. They made their way out via means of a very ancient magical portal, which has been existing in the Maw since the early days of the people of Craw, which is the dark secret of the High Metabolist, that there has been an exit all this time. And as they jumped through the portal, we begin the next chapter. At the beginning of chapter 5, the party is traveling through a great distance of time and space and through themselves. And when they emerge, they awaken inside the walls of an ancient mine led by a clan of Sverf Neblin. They emerge with some physical changes, having woken up parts of them in this strange nexus of magical ley lines that they traveled through. Artyom, having a vision of the sun, burned his forearms and gained the ability to somewhat absorb radiant energy and use it to power his own sun-based spells. Krist fused with some of the residuum, which is a magical element natural in some of these crossing ley lines, which is what these Sverf Neblin harvested and mined for the Dark Elves. In absorbing it, he gained a kind of sheen of crystalline energy to his skin, which will protect him from harm. Herathax had visions of their homeland, the origin of the Dragonborn, this horrible overrun jungle filled with terrible beasts. And in this act of survival, in escaping it, they learned to heighten their own survivability and gain more hit points, basically. And Arvid found a vision of his new totem, the first encounter with the sacred ram of the mountain. In a chance to prove themselves, Arvid engaged with the ram in a headbutting contest, and as a result grew a big old pair of ram's horns that are present at all times. They met the Sverf Neblin, were led to their leader, and made a pact to defeat some beasts that had been hunting their people in exchange for a quick exit to the Underdark, as they were very difficult to navigate. They did very well in this encounter, and as they fled, they re-encountered Reginald 419, who was their personal camera that's been following them around this whole time, and exited the Underdark. The Mortal Dawn battled their way through some of the natural magical defenses of this ancient temple to a forgotten god, fighting reflections of themselves and discovering in the process an ancient machine that was used to measure time in some way. Having to leave this mysterious place, they found themselves in the middle of a chain of islands in the ocean. They journeyed to the nearest one, and they made it to the port city of San Balearis, which is the capital of the Free Isles. And while there, they engaged in some trade, soaked up some local flavor, and when we left off, they were just realizing that they had met some very old friends of theirs.
Personal recommendation would be in that if you have not watched any of this and you would like to start over or start with us, I would recommend the beginning of Chapter 5. That is the end of Cult of the Maw and the beginning of the chapter that we are currently in. I think that's an excellent spot. We've recapped some of it, but the experience was really fun. It's probably some of the best D&D I've ever played and is overall really, really enjoyable.
Also, Law didn't say it, but Cult of the Maw is a module that he wrote that you can find on DriveThruRPG.
Yes, thank you very much. That is true. And if you want to listen to it and play it yourself because you liked it, all the more reason to check it out.
It's really goddamn good.
It is. I write adventures, and I was very impressed with how good it was.
I was sad we had to leave.
Well, thank you for joining us for our very first LU Q&A / League of Ultimate Questions. We hope to do more in the future, assuming how much of you continue to interact with us. You've been great thus far. New episodes go live every Monday. There will be new bonus stuff coming out next month, so stay tuned for that. There's going to be a lot of exciting things happening. And we have bonus content every Friday to help flesh out the world in the game. You can visit us at theluq.com or wherever podcasts are available. If you have questions for the show and you want to see more question and answer stuff, please contact admin at slap-studios, or you can reach out via Twitter. We are slap-#LUQNA. Follow us on all the other social medias as well, including Facebook and Instagram. We are Slap the Dash. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please, please share it with your friends so we can all keep growing and questing together. And if the timing of this release comes to the beginning of July as we have planned, then we will also be launching our second podcast called D20 Questions, where we have a lot of fun answering questions about the theory of D&D with very special guests in the gaming community. We will also be launching our Patreon, which we're all very excited and nervous about. And we will have a public Discord that you can all join to chat with each other, assuming you are members of the Patreon. And we look forward to interacting with you.
We're going to get like $3 and a handshake.
But anyway, thanks for joining us. And until next time, we wish you luck.
Oof.
I liked it. It's so hokey.
So hokey.
Schlocky and dumb. And I love it.
Thank you.